Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As is the case most every week, it is me, your host, Matt Collins, and I am joined once again by Brian Joyner. We are speaking on Tuesday afternoon, so as we typically do, this is taking place before Tuesday's game. We do not know what is happening in the second game of the Mariner series, but we do know what happened in the first game, and is that the Red Sox lost again, and it is that they lost another one-run game, another close and frustrating one. So before we get into that, Brian, what's going on?
Man, I hope we do not drop the ball today.
Well,
defense joke.
That is as good a segue as any to get into what I think is the... I mean, this is the crux of what's going on with the Red Sox right now. Definitely the biggest topic. And it came into play yet again on Monday. That is the defense. Red Sox defense hasn't really been great all year. They've taken their ineptitude to a new level over the last month or so. Monday night, it was Kyle Schwarber as the culprit of the big error in the seventh inning, made a two-out error, just botched a pretty routine ground ball, kept the inning going. Seattle would ultimately get a three-run home run that ended up winning them the game. And this seems to be something that is happening almost every day. There's an error to point to that is costing them games, and that wasn't even the only error of the night on Monday. There's a lot of flaws with the Red Sox right now. I don't think the defense is the only thing holding them back, but if there is one thing that is going to keep them out of the postseason, which if the playoffs started today, they would technically be out of it. Is defense the number one thing, or is there something that you're even more concerned about than the defense?
I mean, it's losing all these games.
Well, first and foremost,
I mean, they've had some close games where, they haven't scored a lot of runs. And that if they had scored runs, like they lost 2-1 to the White Sox, that's, you know,
that's... To be fair, they're facing problem. Lance Lynn, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about Lance Lynn. It's all fake. I know it's not, but after that Verdugo play, I just can't. My feelings on the trade are well known, but with Jeter Downs struggling and Alex Verdugo unable to catch a ball, just doesn't feel good right now. I mean, that was just... It was just bad. The amazing part is they have Hunter Renfro, who's very good at defense, and they're still just garbage.
Well, the thing about Renfro, and this honestly wasn't something that I was aware of, he's making a ton of errors too. I think he has the most errors on the team since the All-Star break or something along those lines. I think I'm botching that stat a little bit, but Pete Abraham tweeted something about the number of errors he's made. He has 10 on the season. He's had his issues too. He's like a boom or bust guy, but obviously I think he's still a net positive and he does so many other things well. But Verdugo's defense, I think, is really what is killing them right now. He cannot play center field, and the best possible lineup for this team would be Verdugo in center field, but you just can't do it, and it's just creating a lot of fit problems, and it's making them choose between defense and offense a lot of the time. And I don't really know how you fix it. It's something that I've been thinking about for the last few weeks, and I don't really think there is a good answer. I'm curious where you land on this. Where do you play Kyle Schwarber? Where do you play JD Martinez? Where do you play Bobby Dalbec? I mean, what is the answer here? How do you make all the pieces fit in a cohesive way, if it's possible?
I'm surprised you don't have an answer, because I have a very good one for this. Just make a deal with the trade deadline for somebody who can play defense. Duh.
I think I don't know that solves the issue. I mean, I was obviously right there with everybody wanting a first baseman, but Dalbec has been much better offensively, and you kind of want him in the lineup. And I think it's just more so that Schwarber and JD Martinez are too repetitive, and it's just, you can't really go a game without sitting one of Verdugo, Martinez, Schwarber, or Dalbec. And I don't really feel great about sitting any of them. I mean, I think you probably have to go Verdugo, but for as much as Verdugo can be frustrating in the field sometimes, I think the lineup is still better with him. I don't know. There's just not an answer, I don't think.
Yeah, that is the answer, is that there's no good answer, which is why in the last 6 weeks they've gone from the top of the AL East to out right now, as of recording, of a wild card spot. That and the fact that Toronto realized what we said the whole year was that if they add a starter at the trade deadline, they might be unstoppable. And they waited and waited and waited and waited, and now they're unstoppable. Now maybe they'll come crashing back to earth like the Yankees did. Thank you, Aceves. But I doubt it. And the Red Sox are a flawed team. I mean, that's the short answer. They're a flawed team. And this is, there's no, even when they had everyone at full strength, their lineups were questionable, to put it mildly. It was a topic, especially the leadoff spot. Then Kike started hitting. But recently with the COVID stuff, obviously they've been working in a constrained environment to fill out these lineups. But even if everyone is at full strength now, there are going to be holes offensively, defensively, you name it, in whatever lineup you put out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know on Monday there were a lot of people complaining about Dalbec not being in the lineup, and I get that. I feel like he probably should be in the lineup pretty much every day, but it feels hard to blame Cora specifically talking about the lineup, making out the lineup, because I just don't know what else to do. But if you had to pick somebody to get the bulk of the time on the bench between Schwarber, Martinez, Verdugo, Dalbec, who do you go with? I don't, like I said, I don't think there's a good answer, but if you had to pick somebody, who would you pick?
Now, I kind of think that this is a false choice.
Or you could do Iglesias too, just, and put Verdugo in center, but
I think it's just rotational. I mean, let me tell you what I think Alex Cora thinks is that Iglesias is very important to have out there, because he's been out there pretty much every game.
He was the offense on Monday for most of the game.
See, that's also
the, what you expect from Jose Iglesias.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the other guys is just going to be rotation. I don't think there's much rotation based on playing time and handedness of pitcher. Now, I got to say, this doesn't speak well of J.D. Martinez, who's supposed to be good enough that he's in there every day. But obviously, that's just not the case at the moment.
He was dealing with some back spasm issues, which is definitely concerning. But I think Martinez has to be at least considered to getting some of these days off. I mean, I still think, obviously, he's still been one of the best hitters on the team looking at the whole season. But he has not been good lately. And frankly, Kyle Schwarber has not been good either. It's been, those are the two guys who you would expect, you need their lineup, or you need their bat in the lineup every day. But they've been the struggling guys. Again, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, but I'm assuming Schwarber is going to be benched. Today, they're facing a lefty, and he has just looked awful at the plate, so that makes the decision a little bit easier. But I don't know. I mean, when Martinez and Schwarber aren't swinging the bat, it's just a disaster because you feel like you need their bats in the lineup every day, but they are just not producing right now. So then when you're... If we look a little bit longer term, I don't think there's all that much that can be done defensively for this season other than just hope for the best. Hope that they don't make these errors. That is not really working out, but there's not really another solution on the horizon. But as we look forward to next season and beyond, center field is becoming something of a question. I think there was some hope that Verdugo could handle it. I think Kike Hernandez does fine out there, but I would prefer him at second base. I think that the lineup just fits better when he's at second base. Jaron Duran obviously is part of the equation now as well, but Duran has his own defensive issues. He was an infielder his whole life. He just started playing outfield when he got drafted in 2018. He does not have a lot of experience in the outfield. The athleticism is obviously there, but he does not make the best reads. His arm is average at best. Do you see them targeting a real center fielder, or do you think they're going to go with some sort of Duran, Kike Hernandez, maybe Alex Verdugo, again, combination? Do you think they're going to take a similar approach, or do you think they're going to, I don't know who's out there for center fielders, to be honest. I think Starling Marte will probably be towards the top of the class, but even if it's not a Starling Marte type, do you think that is something that they're going to address as the middle of the outfield defense, or are we going to see the same kind of approach that you just hope for the best?
First of all, if I was a lawyer, I would object to this when you said a real center fielder. That's leading the witness, but the witness will not follow you into this.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so.
Well, I will not follow you anyway, especially not now, because I think that they'll try out Duran, and I don't think that for any reason having to do anything with Duran, more as I believe it with the faith that they've shown in Dalbec. Or the rope that they gave Dalbec. Now, it's a little different situation, but at the time, like, there were times this year where we were questioning the wisdom of having Dalbec over there. And I'm pretty sure he has surpassed even the wildest dreams of, like, his family over the last 2 months, you know? He's been incredible, and that, you know, good for them. So good for everybody, good for us. But I think that between them being very cheap and them needing some time to develop, and as they said this year at the trade deadline, this is a long-term project. I think that Duran is the guy. And I think that we maybe are just a little bit too eager to throw dirt on Duran or anybody, like we did the same thing with Dalbec. And we've talked about these minor league hitters have had trouble adjusting. They have had trouble, but you see a lot of them adjust. You see the adjustments happen.
So I think I didn't explain myself very well.
I'm not just talking about hitting either. I'm talking about, I know you're talking about fielding.
Yeah. Well, I'm, I mean, I think the other path that they could take, and I think it's an interesting one, is to look, and we talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago, is to consider a trade involving Verdugo or Renfro, and then putting Duran in a corner and being able to hide that defense a little more, or just kind of sticking through. And obviously there's a lot of moving pieces to that. We don't know what the trade market would look like for either of those guys or anything, but that was more the case. I definitely think Duran should and will be a significant part of the offense. I think he'll probably play something like 120 games if he's healthy, but I'm just curious how much of that will be in center field, especially with the bad defensive taste left in everybody's mouth over the last 6 weeks.
They should trade Alex Verdugo for a package, including no. Jackie Bradley Jr.
JVJ has been just awful this year. But he's not been good. A little better defensively than what they have. The other long-term thing, and this is something we've been talking about, it seems like for a decade, but I guess we've been talking about it for at least a couple years now, is the left side of the infield, Devers and Bogarts. Is the bad defense going for the team going to motivate this team to change one or either of their positions? With Bogarts, it is worth noting that the shortstop class coming into free agency this year is stacked. We know Bloom's history of spending, but I think there's still at least a little bit of room for optimism, perhaps misguided, but I'm still feeling a little bit of optimism. They'll spend a little money. Does it make sense, or do you think that Bogarts will be moved, or Devers will be moved, or both will be moved as soon as next season, or are they going to stick with this again next year?
First of all, I don't know if we've been talking about this for 2 years. I know it feels like it, but I don't think so. I think this is
We've been talking about Devers moving off third base for a couple years now.
And I think that's far more likely than Xander moving, frankly.
I think so too.
Xander seems like a sort of repeat of a Derek Jeter situation. Not totally, but in that he's the shortstop and that's sort of end of story.
They're going to sign Carlos Correa or Trevor Story. I forget who else is out there. Marcus Semien.
By the way, many props to Marcus Semien. What? Just incredible. I mean, Blue Jays have a lot of things going on. Obviously, I wish the Red Sox were ahead of them, but that dude is just mashing this year. Anyhow, it seems almost likely at this point that Devers moves. And since it seems likely to happen at some point, I don't know why it would be later rather than sooner. Do you think it's finally time to pull the trigger on that? Next year. No, I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Not this year. I don't think he's going to be any better anywhere else. I don't think a move to first base will make him better, and I don't think it really helps the team because you have your best prospect is coming up soon at first base. I think the place for Devers is probably DH and just let him hit, but JD Martinez probably isn't opting out, and even if he did, I think they would probably look to bring back Schwarber. So I think Devers is going to survive another year. I will say I wouldn't be surprised, and again, this isn't next year, but 2 years down the road, say, when that DH spot opens, I wouldn't be terribly surprised if Bogarts moved over to third base. I probably still would bet on him sticking at shortstop for a long time, like he said, sort of the Jeter comparison. But I think the best use of those players is Devers as a DH and Bogarts as a third baseman. Like I said, I don't see that. I definitely don't see that happening next year. I'm not sure I ever see that happening, but I just feel like that's the best use of their skill sets. I just think with Devers, his mistakes are always mental, and I don't really know how that translates any better to first base than it would third base, especially first base you're involved in more plays.
And this assumes that, and I mean, I don't think they will at this point, but this assumes they don't trade Bobby D. Or I'm not even going to say trade Tristan. Trade Tristan Cassis. Because there is a little logjam. No matter what, there's going to be a lot. I mean, assuming JD sticks with the team, which I don't know. Maybe JD is so in flux that he has a come to a Sevis moment and decides to leave the Sevis. I can't see it, but.
Yeah, I just can't imagine. I also, with the defense, it kind of feels to me that Alex Cora is skirting a lot of the blame. He's not really getting, like, everybody's talking about the defense, but it doesn't really seem to be coming down on Cora. And I said earlier, I don't blame him for the lineup makeup, and I certainly don't. It's not his fault that the roster just has so many pieces that don't fit well together. But I think he got so much praise for the way they played early in the season, and he really harped in spring training almost every day on them playing clean baseball and playing good defense. And I don't know, I've been a little frustrated, I think, with the lamestream media's coverage of Cora. It just feels like the coaching staff needs to be taking a bigger chunk of the blame. And I would assume that's probably happening on sports radio. As I'm getting older, I think my similarities to sports radio are becoming a little more concerning. But I don't know. I was just curious if you had any thoughts on the coaching staff here, because it does feel like when it's as endemic for the whole team as it is, I think the coaching staff has to get some of the blame.
Well, this could be a stopped clock moment for the sports radio crowd. I mean, if they've been mad about, look, when they're winning, it's, as I said, the whole first half of the season, we're talking about the lineups. I kept saying, like, well, they're winning, so like they're not going to change anything. And obviously process wise, that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but I absolutely think that Alex Cora shoulders some blame for this. I mean, this is happening before our eyes, and not a drop off to this degree, but to some degree because of the discrepancies with, say, the lineup early in the season and the optimal lineup or anything close to it. People have been predicting a little bit of backsliding, and get that there's been more than expected could just be more regression than, you know, an aberrant amount of regression, but there could be reasons for it too. And I don't know. I mean, I know that the COVID spread is wreaking havoc with the team. And I don't want to get into a thing about COVID, but A, they could all just get vaccinated. And B, just, you got to be better than this. I mean, I don't know any way to say it other than that. It's like, at some point, the excuse only goes so far, and I just, man, I just, every win now is pretty much every win now is still pulling teeth. And I know that there were some close losses, but it's tough. I mean, still in aggregate, they are sort of, right now they've come back to a range that we saw them in the beginning of the year. So still, it could just be normal regression. But at the same time, when you're in first place on like August 1st or, you know, close to it, you don't want to regress this much. You want to do everything possible to step on the gas. And they made it, I mean, High and Loom made it very clear they're thinking long term. And in the short term, the problems do not seem to simply be the actual constitution of the roster or medical related. It also seems to be a management issue. And the manager is Alex Cora.
No, I mean, that's right. And like you, I'm not super interested in delving too much into the COVID issue. And I think it is a little more complicated than them being one of the few teams under the vaccination level because there's been so many breakthrough cases, and we've seen teams that did get over 85% experience their own breakouts. But at the same time, them not reaching that level, if you're looking for one person to blame, it has to be the manager. I mean, he's the guy that he's supposed to be able to get everybody to buy in, and he clearly hasn't done that. And, I mean, Chris Sale tested positive, and he was in the dugout not long before that, not wearing a mask, and it's become pretty clear since he tested positive that he was not vaccinated. So, I mean, just little things like that, I think, count against Cora. And, I mean, I don't know. I still think Cora is a good manager, but between this year and 2019, I don't know. I no longer think that he's one of the best managers in the league, which is something that I thought before the season started.
I mean, I still think he's a good manager of people in the way, I mean, I think the team loves him, and that's very important. And I'm not going to overlook that. I also don't, you know, baseball players are stubborn, so I don't necessarily put it on him that more people aren't vaccinated, because I think he's trying to be a player's manager in that sense too. Not that that's right. I would say that he's just, in that case, he's in a very difficult position. I wish he would be more like, say, Bruce Arians, who was basically like, you have a choice. But I mean, the thing about football is
very different relationship between right. coach and
well,
player.
It's very different. And the contracts. So they're yeah. basically like, you want
the NFL
play.
Contracts don't actually exist, is my
right. So with it, like, unless you like anyone who's less good than, say, like Cole Beasley is probably like the floor of how good you have to be to get away with that nonsense. I mean, sorry, I don't. You people are going to listen to this. Flaunting it is the nonsense. That's what I'm saying is the nonsense. I don't necessarily blame him for that, but the lineups have never been even close to optimal. They have been designed to put certain archetypes of players in certain places based on Alex Cora's understanding of the game, which I think when he has the best ingredients has worked really well, but he doesn't, and he hasn't changed his approach, and I don't think it has helped them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I, as far as the last thing about the vaccination, it's certainly more on the players than anybody else. Chris Sale not being vaccinated, not wearing a mask while in the same dugout as Eduardo Rodriguez, who obviously went through all that last year. I mean, at the end of the day, that's on him. But yeah, we don't have to harp on that stuff anymore. I do want to run through where we're at in the wild card race right now, because as Jim Bowden once famously said, they should call it the wild card. He was talking about the game, but we can call it the wild card race because things are pretty nutty right now. Red Sox are, I don't know, they're in one way, they're technically tied with the Yankees for the second spot in the standings. They are both the same number of games back. In the division, the Yankees have a one-game lead in the loss column. They have a slight lead in percentage points, so do with that what you will. In terms of Fangraphs playoff odds, they have it really as a three-team race. They have the Blue Jays playoff odds at 72.5. They have the Red Sox at 63. They have the Yankees at 55.7. And then the A's and Mariners are both 5% or less. But they are also, they are both within three games of, or I believe 2.5 games of the second spot, which the Red Sox and Yankees hold right now. So, looking ahead, the Red Sox, the rest of the Red Sox schedule, they finish up this series in Seattle. Again, we've only seen one game. By the time you're listening to this, they will have played two. And then they have three against Baltimore, two against the Mets, three against the Yankees, three against Baltimore, and then 3 against Washington. So it is a fairly soft schedule down the stretch, besides those 5 games against the New York teams, and even the Mets are strange, and obviously the Yankees have been a little bit of a mess. But it kind of seems to me, and I want to go quickly through the rest of the teams in a second, but just looking at the Red Sox schedule and looking at how things stand right now, I think the Blue Jays are basically locked into one of those spots. I know by record they're not really ahead by that much, but just on paper they just seem so much better. I'm kind of penciling in them into one of the spots, and then it's 4 teams for the other spot. And the Red Sox and Yankees seem to be far ahead, especially by those Fangraphs playoff odds. Does it feel to you like it does to me that the season's almost going to entirely come down to that 3-game series against the Yankees?
Well, the Yankees are garbage, so that helps. And the Blue Jays are on one right now. And I agree with you. I'll pencil them in for a spot. So we're in a beautiful situation where if the Red Sox are going to make it, it will be at the expense of the Yankees, thus killing 2 birds with 1 stone. Otherwise, I think Toronto will end up, hopefully. Unfortunately, Gerrit Cole exists, but end up killing the other bird. But I outside of that 2-week stretch the Yankees had, they've just not been good. And so I sort of feel right now like the Red Sox have an edge, because they just, even if they've been bumpy recently, they just have a longer track record of playing at a slightly higher level than the Yankees. So I feel somewhat confident about making the wild card game. Really? And that's, I mean, I don't know. If it's a three-way race, I mean, I live in New York, and people are so down about the Yankees around here, it's hard not to internalize that, I guess. If we're talking about between these 3 teams, if you're going to throw in the other teams, then I don't know, man. But if we're talking about these 3 teams, whatever, I'm going to speak it into existence. Get the Yankees out of here.
So my concern with the Yankees is that they have a chance to kind of build a little momentum, and probably more importantly, a little bit of a cushion, potentially, if the Red Sox let them. Because the Yankees, the end of the Yankee season is tough. Their last 3 series are in Boston, in Toronto, and then they finish at home against Tampa. Who knows what Tampa will actually be playing for in that series, but I think they have enough depth that that'll be tough no matter what. But before that, they have, tonight they start a 3-game series against Baltimore, and then they play 3 against Cleveland, and then they play 3 against Texas. They have a real chance to really kind of get, like I said, get back on track. Now, they've had stretches against bad teams before. They lost 2 out of 3 at the start of the month against Baltimore. They lost 2 out of 3 against the Angels. It's certainly no guarantee that they're going to be able to beat up on those teams, but that is my concern with the Yankees, is just that they have their next 12 games are against objectively bad teams.
Yeah, but they've been objectively bad. So, let's see how that goes.
I don't know if they've been Baltimore bad, but yeah, no. I mean, it's fair. And then as far as Toronto goes,
like, does that Brandon Hyde tackle them all?
He will. Or maybe he's just mad about Robbie Ray's pants, but I'm not really sure. But yeah, Toronto, I think the interesting thing for Toronto is that there's still an outside chance that they can make the division interesting. They probably can't. So they're 8 games out right now, but they have 5 games left against the Rays. If they somehow manage to win all 5 of those games, the division will be interesting again. But I just think Toronto, I hesitate to call them, I kind of want to call them the World Series favorites, or at least the American League favorites. I hesitate to do that just because the wild card game exists and anything can happen in one game. And like you said, Gerrit Cole exists, or if it's against the Red Sox, Chris Sale exists. But man, if the Blue Jays do make it to the divisional round, I just don't know how anybody beats them. They're so good.
Yeah, I mean, this has been what they've been building toward. And, you know, they, unlike the Red Sox, saw the trade down the line and said, no, this is it. This is what we're building. This is what we're building at. And they're just playing. They're peaking at the right time, or right before the right time. But, you know, horseshoes and hand grenades and maybe the playoff race. They're extremely good. They're terrifying. As long as the Yankees don't do anything, I'm very pro Blue Jays in a Red Sox neutral situation. When it comes to the Red Sox, I would like the Red Sox to beat them. But
I would hope so.
Yes. Yes. So
I mean, I think that the
said my piece.
I was just going to say, I think the thing for the Blue Jays, I mean, obviously the trade deadline getting Berríos was huge. And obviously they went big in free agency with George Springer. But the big thing to me is just how well they hit on Semien and Ray. Because, I mean, those are guys, they were probably a tier above where the Red Sox went. I mean, the Red Sox got, I think the Red Sox did objectively well in free agency with guys like Kiki Hernandez and Hunter Renfroe. They have been very good players, but Toronto went out and gave 1-year deals to guys who are going to finish top three. One guy is going to finish top three in MVP, or at least top five, and then another guy who's going to finish top three and maybe win the Cy Young. And I'll speak just for myself. I liked Semien coming into the year. I did not like Robbie Ray. I thought Robbie Ray stunk. And he's the best pitcher on the team. He's probably going to start. He probably starts the wild card game for them, right? I mean, I know Berríos has been awesome too, and Ryu is awesome, but I think it's got to be Robbie Ray.
It'll make a lot of the viewers happy, I'll tell you that much.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, so that's sort of where we're at with the wild card. Again, Oakland and Seattle, I think Fangraph's giving them a 5% chance for Oakland, 4% for Seattle. That feels a little extreme. I don't think they're that far out of it, but they definitely seem to be behind the Red Sox and Yankees, even for all the flaws that they have. Do you agree that 5% gives them too short of a chance, or are you pretty much writing them off as well?
Well, let's see what happens with the remainder of this series, because
this series is huge. Yeah,
yeah. Just, you know, change depending on the result tonight. When people listen to this, it could. I would imagine if the Mariners win, they're going to get a substantial bump there.
I don't understand the Mariners. I just don't get how they are here. I do think their pitching is better than people give them credit for. During Monday's game, I heard a lot of people on Twitter saying that they were getting beat by a terrible pitcher, and Logan Gilbert is not a terrible pitcher. He's very talented, much better than his ERA indicates. But that offense just does not impress me, and it's just wild that they're still in this race. I don't quite understand.
All this for another Astros-Dodgers World Series. Isn't it going to be annoying?
No,
it'll be fun. It'll be really fun.
That would be awesome. I think it's going to be another Tampa-Dodgers World Series, and that I don't think would be as fun.
I mean, definitely Astros-Dodgers would be fun just because it would be football. And Blue Jays-Dodgers would be fun because it would just be like...
The talent upstart on the field would be absurd.
Yeah. White Sox fans, whatever. Deal with it. Go win it and then come back.
It's going to be like White Sox Brewers or something stupid.
No, it's going to be the Dodgers.
Probably going to be the Dodgers. All right, a couple other things to hit on. Or I guess I should say where... So you do think it's... You have the Red Sox over the Yankees right now.
It's like a coin flip.
Yeah. But okay. Well, that's kind of where I'm at. I would probably go 50-50 between those two. And it just really feels like it's setting up to whoever wins two out of three of that series is going to be the wild card. And good news is that it's at Fenway, I guess. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, a couple other things I wanted to talk about, starting with prospect stuff. Baseball America just did their final major update to the top 100 list before the end of the season. Nick York is all the way up to 64. He top 50 by the end of the season in baseball, or by the start of next season, I should say.
I mean, probably in some lists. I kind of don't even make a giant distinction between like 30.
It's
and
probably not. No, I mean, that's the correct way to do it, but yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty, I mean, if he finishes strong, of course, because there's going to be a whole offseason and recency bias, and it's not necessarily wrong, is going to push him up. Somebody will have him top 50 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I think Kylie McDaniel said that he's already almost there for him. Obviously, he's already almost here for Baseball America. I mean, it's just, he's been so impressive that he's been better since getting promoted to Greenville. It's just been kind of wacky. And now the Red Sox have four guys in the top 64. They have three guys in the top 30. Casas was, I don't have it in front of me. I believe Casas was 19. Marcelo Meyer was somewhere in like the 29 to 30 range, something like that. And then Jaron Duran was 37. So Red Sox farm system has lacked top end talent for a couple of years, but they have some interesting guys now. So if you're looking for some positivity, there it is. That's about all you're going to get.
I believe MLB Pipeline has Meyer number one over Casas.
I thought you meant baseball. I was like, well, that's absurd. But I guess I could see it. I wouldn't go there. But I mean, middle infielder versus first baseman is probably enough for it to at least be a conversation.
Also, like right now, there's a lot of range of outcomes. And I think it's sort of aiming at the higher end of the range of outcomes.
Yeah. To be honest, MLB Pipeline's rankings are always a little strange to me. But I will admit they know more than me. All right, I've seen this conversation happen a few times. I went on the radio a couple days ago and they asked me about it. I don't know why it's a conversation, but we're going to participate in a little discourse here. If the wild card game was today and the Red Sox were in it, everybody was rested, they could do whatever they wanted. Are you starting Nate Eovaldi over Chris Sale?
I cannot believe anyone would ask this question in actual good faith. Because I wouldn't. Yeah. No, I would not. I would start Chris Sale. And then, if I had to, I'd bring in Nathan Eovaldi. Like, I don't know. I'd start Chris Sale. Chris Sale.
I'll start off by saying I agree with you. I think there is some merit to the idea that Sale coming off an injury, maybe you just want him to let it fly for an inning and you want to save him for later in the game. But I don't think that's the case. He hasn't really looked like a guy who needs to be treated like that. But the real answer is that the wild card game isn't today. And I could see myself changing my mind if Sale is just good the rest of the way. And if Eovaldi is dominant for the rest of the season, I might change my mind. But right now I think it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, I've had that question asked me multiple times, and it's getting figured it was something to address.
Eovaldi will not. It's just not. The whole reason they brought back Sale this way was to have him available to do this very thing if needed.
Well, I think the real answer is that, or my real answer is that this race is going to go down to the wire, and I don't think they're going to really be able to set things up necessarily exactly how they want.
That makes way more sense.
Yeah. But all right, one last thing about Eduardo Rodriguez looking a little bit into the future. Rodriguez had kind of a weird start on Monday. Early on, it looked like he wasn't even going to make it through four, ended up making it through six. It's just been such a strange season for him, and he's obviously a free agent after the year. How aggressively do you think the Red Sox should be going after him? Do you think would you be willing to go multiple years, or would you say pillow contract or nothing?
Man, I don't know. He's had a whole, it's not just this season that it's weird. His whole career has been weird.
Yeah, he's bizarre pitcher.
So it's kind of hard for me to gauge what they want to or even should do with him. But you exhorted him to turn it on yesterday. What do you think they should do?
I mean, as a person whose job it is to talk about the Red Sox, I would like Eduardo Rodriguez to stick around because I just think he is so fascinating. But from a baseball perspective, I think I'd probably just let him go. And just, I think it might just be better for everyone to just let him go and flourish somewhere else. I still think he can be really good. And I mean, we've seen him be very good. It's just, I don't know. The inconsistency is kind of maddening. And I would probably just say maybe another staff can get more consistency out of him, and then maybe the Red Sox can use the money that they would spend on him for somebody that they can get more consistency from. It just seems, I feel like it probably seems best for everybody to just go in a different direction. But again, just like the wild card starter thing, they don't have to make that decision right now. And
does seem like a Cardinals devil magic candidate.
I was thinking more Rays. I have a bad feeling he's going to be like the ace of Tampa staff next year, which would be a waking nightmare. All right, so that is going to do it for today's show. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If applicable, leave a rating and a review. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Brian is at Brian Joyner. Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. And you can find all of our writing and the rest of our podcasts at overthemonster.com. And we will be back with you next week.